resorts and there are resorts, but there is only one Whistler. In this documentary of one of the world's most prestigious resorts, we will delve into its evolution from the first intent to how we know it today. Originally titled London Mountain, the current name, Whistler Mountain, was coined by Vancouver businessman from the distinct whistling noise which a horny marmot makes in the midst of fornication. In the early 1900s, Whistler was a world-renowned base for the glorious activities of logging, mining and fishing, and in the 50s it was more of a summer attraction than a winter sports mecca. The 60s brought about an innovative thought process. A goal was formulated to create a ski hill for the intention of a future winter Olympic site. An early hopeful bid was set up for 1976. These were the days when the legendary Jim McConkie was pioneering the skiing in the area with his skiing forays back in the Fitzsimmons Valley in the early days, which later became known as helicopter skiing. One may think that the hippies of Canada were in charge of this operation. There were still no roads, electricity or sewer systems, and the valley was full of renegade squatters' cabins.
Welcome to the land of birds! Show me your papers!
There was squatters up there in those days. There was a section of the mountain for the town for people squatting, actually.
The Canadian government finally gave in during the 70s and awarded Whistler with its first court municipality in Canadian history, putting aside 53 acres of land designated for the resort. By 1980, construction began for the recently renovated Whistler Village, the site of a former garbage dump. Whistler Mountain, the pioneer luxury resort, experienced its first customer competition in the 80s when Blackcomb opened and becomes the first mile-high mountain in North America. It was then, at Blackcomb's inception, when a challenging run was named after Sylvain Sedan, a famous Swiss-French gentleman often dubbed as Skieur the Impossible. The year 1998 marked a milestone for both resorts when they merged onto IntraWest Corporation. This, in turn, brought us closer to the current situation.
Think about Whistler.
I don't much care for it anymore. I like it like it used to be. Back when I first started skiing up there, they just had one lift out of a Husky gas station. It was just a place where real skiers hang out.
Kind of a local spot?
Yeah, well, it was a hard spot to get to. It took you 2.5 hours. A real tricky road to get up there, and used to sleep in the garbage dump, which is now the city.
Yeah.
And it's really grown. I was up there this summer for the first time in a few years, and just couldn't believe how much it's grown. It's just like a big suburb now of West Vancouver.
As both the residents and businessmen of Whistler Blackcomb prepared to bid for the 2010 Winter Olympics in 2002, it became evident that Whistler had evolved beyond mere mortal aspirations. It was not long before large corporations had bought out the smaller of business, and many locals had been pushed out for timeshares years ago. Many locals had since moved to outlying areas such as Squamish and Pemberton Valley. Their once own and dear Whistler had now become unaffordable to live in. Left behind was a landscape filled with rather empty but expensive mansions. Although it has increased tourism, therefore bettering the general economy, Whistler had seemed to lose some of its original intentions.
Overlooking 7,000 feet in the air, there was a band We had full spread. There were chefs up there. We learned how to juggle on the glacier. There was golf, a guy up there with golf, and we got to hit golf balls out into oblivion. They were biodegradable, so it's all good.
Is nothing sacred? Even the name of the original Sedum Colère has since mysteriously changed to Colère Extreme by the folks at IntraWest Corporation. Whether this evolution has been for better or for worse, Whistler still stands as a record-breaking, tourist-attracting, kick-ass destination for people from all over the world.